and welcome to Cruisin' for a Reviews, and the podcast where I get a friend to watch a Tom Cruise movie they've never seen before and review it with me. I'm your host, Kara Westworth, and I'm rejoined by Lauren to finish off talking about Rayman.
Hello. Lovely to be back.
Well, let's just fucking jump right into it.
Let's go.
Because we can. If you haven't listened to part one, well, what's going on? Just fucking do it and then come back to this
one. Oh, absolutely. Okay? You'll learn so much about autism, whether you want to or not, because I can't shut up about it. As I was saying to Kara earlier, when you find out you're autistic at age 32, your new special interest, which is common amongst autistic people, is autism. So you start like geeking out about your own brain and everything. I wouldn't say I'm perfect because I'm still learning as well. And autism is a very big spectrum, but it's really fun talking about this film in relation to my own experiences. I think it's a mighty fine time.
Hell yeah. Okay, so road trip part of the movie has commenced. The first hurdle they come across, apart from having to drive on back roads, is that Charlie's not allowed to drive through the night, which he tries to do to make up time because Rayman wants to go to bed at a certain time, things like that. He has to be in bed by 11 p.m. And the next day it's pouring with rain and Raymond's like, absolutely fucking not. So Charlie has to stay in this crappy little hotel for a whole day. I mean, he gets to make all these phone calls that he needs to make, which...
Yeah, he finds stuff anyway.
Yeah, just there's a bit where he's just sitting on the bed and there's like this obnoxious ad playing and he's just sort of sitting there just like...
Yes, yes.
Dying inside.
It's so funny. I get really overwhelmed by lots of noises. So that going on and then him being on the phone constantly, I was like watching this and I'm like, this film is like already for me an autistic nightmare because there's too much going on. Especially the phone call in the, we talked about the phone call setup that Charlie had at the beginning of the film, but that opening scene is like, it's so much going on so quickly, but a lot of voices overlapping. And I'm like, no, I don't want to watch this.
Yeah, it's not enjoyable. It's quite awful.
It's supposed to represent that stress.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it does it very effectively.
So he does things like he's setting up the court date for custody of Rayman and trying to save his own business because all the imported cars, it's all going to shit.
Oh, yeah.
So they're driving along and Rayman keeps talking about how I used to drive this car. I'm a very good driver, this, that, and the other. And he also keeps talking about how he needs to buy new underwear from the Kmart in Cincinnati, which it just yes. like he really hyper-focuses on that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's particular. Like, I get it. We were talking about this with my husband, actually, and for no joke, 7 years, I would only buy socks with Hello Kitty on them. And it's just because my brain decided, oh, I had those Hello Kitty socks that one time and they were my favorite socks. So all other socks have to do the same thing. And it's probably abnormal, but it's quite harmless. It's just like my brain gets
It's not abnormal because my favorite undies are from Kmart. I'm very particular about, and I have so many other underpants that I could wear, but these ones are so fucking comfy and are just perfect. Yes. I'm like, if I've got to wear the other ones, I'm like, fucking this.
Oh, I don't want to wear the ones. No, it's true. I feel like comfy jocks is like, there are definitely like relatable things, but like dial it up to 1,000 for autism. It's a funny old thing, especially in this movie as well. Like that's the way they represent it.
Charlie goes absolutely off, like stops the car and is like just screaming on the road because he cannot understand it and he doesn't try to either.
Oh, this bit actually, I could not stop laughing at Tom Cruise in this bit because it's like watching Nicolas Cage lose his shit. When Tom Cruise loses his shit in a movie, he does it in such a Tom Cruise way. So I actually was like, yeah, here we go. We're teeing off. You're a piece of shit, but I love watching you act. So it's okay.
So true.
It was so fun being him like,
just wigging the fuck out.
Like throwing hands up in the air, like really getting into it as well. Oh, honestly, like incredible Tom Cruise-y moment. Tom Cruise is losing one shit a cruise.
It can be. He does flip out a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That was definitely
a Tom Cruise flip out is fantastic.
He resolves to go to find a psychiatrist in the next town, which he can't do because the next town's like this tiny little, I mean, it's a big town, but he can't find a psychiatrist. And I don't think you can just walk into a fucking psychiatrist. Thank you, Charlie. Like, come on. So anyway, he goes to he just finds like a GP to go to. Oh no, before I get to that, there's a bit where Raymond gets out the car while Charlie's trying to ring around to find a doctor and Raymond just starts wandering and he's walking across when it says walk and then it says don't walk. So he just stops in the middle of the road. And
yes.
You know, these big burly cowboy looking dudes like are quite abusive at first, but then they realize something's wrong and they just kind of like, they get much more gentle.
Yeah, they're like, hey, what the hell? They're really angry, but then they're like, they twig. they're like, oh, wait, no, it's not very nice to be mean to people with disabilities.
Much faster than Charlie fucking does in this movie.
He's had days to twig. He has not twigged, not once. He has twixed and cursed. Like, it's funny, like, it's such a ham-fisted representation, but autistic minds do like to take things literally. But it's a very ham-fisted. Like I said, once again, I'm going to quote my friend Clem Basto, imperfect representation is still representation. And, you know, 80s representation. But autistic brains do take things literally. Really, it doesn't look like that often, but in case that's what they chose to represent that. So
to a public who's like, what the fuck is autism? Like, I guess, get a fucking punch him in the head to make him understand.
Oops, the fuck is autism?
When they're at the doctor's office, so, you know, there's like in the waiting room and while the nurse is being like, so you're saying he's autistic? I'm like, what the kind of fucking nurse is this?
Mm.
But there's this old man just talking about the Pony Express. Did you notice that?
Mm.
And he's just old man.
Yeah.
Apparently, like, he's not an extra. He's just an old man who wouldn't stop fucking talking about the Pony Express. And they kept him in just because they thought it was
really
like, yeah,
my heart.
It was really cute.
I like, as someone who gets focused on shit and wants to talk about stuff that I like all the time, so that really tickles me. I quite like that. It's very
like,
sweet.
Immediately,
it's so
what
cute.
Is the Pony Express? And like, get out of this. You don't need to start reading about what the Pony Express is.
But what is it now? I
basically,
have to know.
It's a mail service. It existed for quite a short amount of time in the US before trains and everything became more widespread. But it was messages and mail transferred by people on horses. And
what?
Yeah,
that's Pony Express.
A great name.
I love it.
The doctor actually tries to explain autism to Charlie, which he's had it explained to him, but he didn't listen. So this doctor tries, and this doctor doesn't know it as intimately as like Dr. Bruno, but he tries to explain it to him a little bit better, especially the savant. Because he asks, he sort of twigs that maybe this guy is also savant. And so they ask him questions and they get him to add really big numbers together, and Raymond does it really, really well. And Charlie's like, he's a genius. And then the doctor conveys that, well, yeah, he knows numbers, but if I give you a dollar and something costs 60 cents, how much money do you have left? And Raymond just can't figure it out because he doesn't understand money. And
that concept isn't connecting. Yeah. I think I might have rolled my eyes at that a little bit because, I mean, at the end of the day, money and dollars, like as a concept, like could be explained. And it just frustrates me that no one would have explained it to him, especially because later on he learns how to play fucking cards. Yeah. So 100 cents to a dollar is like, you know.
That was a sticking point earlier where the doctor at the mental institution actually says he doesn't have a concept of money, and I think really sets up his fury.
Oh,
because he's
like,
he has no
right.
concept of fucking money, but then why does he get all the money? You know, mental institutions aren't free, Charlie, for fuck's sake. The money's not there for him to go buy a beamer. Like, it's there for him to survive.
Especially in the state.
Dumb cunt.
States and... You piece of shit.
I mean, Tom Cruise, I'm like, I love you, but fucking Charlie Babbitt can go eat a fucking turd.
Charlie Babbitt. Or get in my cunt, Ethan Hunt. Charlie Babbitt, eat a turd. I don't know. It doesn't rhyme. I tried.
Charlie Babbitt, dag nabbit.
Oh, dag nabbit. Oh, this and more wizardry on Cruising for Reviews In. Incredible.
I know I said I wouldn't keep going through this as I read my list, but I really like when they're in the phone booth and Charlie doesn't trust Raymond to sneak off. So they're both in their own booth.
Yes.
And he's like, uh-oh, fart. And then he farts. And seeing Tom Cruise say the word fart so many times, hilarious.
That tickles me, but only because I would do that to somebody, like knowingly.
Oh,
I would be like,
the amount of times I'll be getting into or out of the car and I'll fart purposely while I'm still in the car.
Hey, wait, so I was about to get out and you're like, wait a minute. Just wait. Oh my God, just wait. No, stop. Do you hear that? Incredible. It's what a setup. Oh,
and then they have to sit in the car.
Like, you just lock all the doors. You use the... Good. It's good. Anyway, that was wild. That, I don't know. There's lots of moments. I feel like it's just one thing I want to like reiterate is like Raymond's acting feels more like a parody.
Mm.
It was once again like they were trying their best to represent what they knew.
Yeah.
In the best way they could. But, you know, obviously, yeah, neurotypical actors trying to capture the experience for a non-neurodiverse audience.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's so cringy to watch a lot of it. I'm sure. Did you cringe when you were watching some of his acting?
Oh, that's the thing with Dustin Hoffman.
A little
bit. Yes, and it's because I know how different.
Oh yeah, like
it
you
is.
Know what you know.
Like
now.
When I
seeing
it. Yeah, I'm trying to see it through the lens of the time it came out and all the good intentions.
Oh yeah, same.
Like I get why he won an Oscar and everything because I think, and if apparently Dustin Hoffman hated his performance. Both he and Tom Cruise didn't think this movie was going to do well.
Really? Huh.
Apparently would practice by, they learn each other's lines and would practice as each other. Because Dustin Hoffman was originally going to be Charlie and someone else is going to be. So yeah, it was all those little tidbits. But
oh, I love it. Yeah.
I can see it from the perspective that people who didn't like know what autism was, or anyone who knew a little bit about autism, thinks it's people who are nonverbal, who have no empathy, like all the heightened stereotypes.
Yeah. Things.
And this has given it a little bit more nuance, and it's given it like, you know, a bit more depth than what anyone might have known about it then. And I think even up until the last 10, 15 years, that still would have almost been the case. I feel like it's been last
for sure. I mean, like
decade or so where it's actually become, oh no, it's not just, and this is not, you know, in the medical world or anything. This is talking about strictly just ordinary people who don't know anything about science or psychiatry or anything. Like I think up until reasonably recently, this movie still would have been eye-opening to a lot of people.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I feel like up until like 2010 even.
Yeah.
Maybe later, but I mean, like, I don't know, like it's everything changed when I found out I was autistic myself, you know. I wasn't like offended to find out. I was just like, it was like a surprise. And then it's funny, like, oh, okay. I don't know how relevant this is, but I'll just say it anyway. It's funny when you find out you're autistic and then you start telling of like close people to you that you're autistic, like family members, they want to make you feel better. I feel better because I know I'm autistic. Yeah. They want to make me feel better because I found out I'm autistic. And I think it's quite strange. Like I had one family member be like, oh, I don't think they should call it that. And I'm like, well, then what should they call it? Because I don't mind being autistic. I was like, and it's not because like she's being mean. Yeah. She just goes like, oh, historically, the data means that's a bad thing, or that means that you're less capable having a disability.
Yeah, like the connotations of autism really negative. Like
totally. And I'm like, no, it's so vast. It's so much more vast than all the people I love most in this world have turned out to be on the spectrum in some way, like or not neurotypical in some way, whether they've been officially diagnosed or not. I was talking to my best friend from high school, who is also non-binary and also like not diagnosed, but obviously like self-diagnosis is pretty common because of the lack of accessibility for adults to get diagnosed, and we could not be more different. They are incredibly introverted, very like I said, like very bookish, very good at study, all these things. And I don't know why, but from primary school through to high school, I loved them. I could not work out why. I was just like, this person is just the fucking best. And it's because we were both on the spectrum and it makes so much sense. We speak the same language.
Yeah.
It's funny. I guess it's like changing the narrative of like autism being bad. It's quite freeing to know that you're autistic. It means that you can like reconfigure your expectations of what you can and can't do. Mm. Instead of thinking, which is a really common thing amongst people with either ADHD and autism because of the overlap there, especially in the school system, which is where it starts to develop because we don't cope with it often. Parents, teachers will just say you're lazy. So you just think you're lazy your entire life and you think that everyone can do it, including you, and you just have to try harder. No, it turns out I can't.
Yeah.
And that's really, it was like an amazing thing to know. It was like, oh my God, it wasn't me. Like, I'm really smart. I have a lot of drive in things I am interested in. But if it's something that I don't get straight away, or if it's something that I struggle with, like to keep focused on, my brain does not want to let me do it. And then it gets overwhelmed, which is the autistic side, more than the ADHD side. And I just shut down. Like I failed all my shot subjects at one stage in high school because I had what I realize now was an autistic shutdown.
Yeah.
I didn't go nonverbal. I just stopped doing things because it was like, it was too much work and I wasn't getting anywhere and I was overwhelmed. But nobody knew that. They just were like, Lauren, you're lazy. Why aren't you just doing it? I don't fucking know.
If I knew, I'd just
now
do
I
it.
Do. Yeah, exactly. Totally. So it's really interesting. It's quite liberating to know you're autistic. Yeah. Like it's, being able to understand your own brain is the best thing you can do.
Well, I guess that would also apply with, you know, any other medical condition. Like, you know, you're diagnosed with something and you're like, people are like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, no, like unless it's you know terminal, I guess.
Yeah, in some ways that's going to harm you, I guess. Yeah,
I'm not going to go into it because it's a bit embarrassing. But I had a thing. My doctor's like, oh, you are at risk of this, and I was like, oh, that's really embarrassing. But I'm glad I know now because it's not just my body falling apart.
Exactly. No, 100%. No, it's like when you know, like the information can just help you.
Yeah.
Like it's just you can't be helped without.
Because it's not irreversible, like you know, an irreversible thing, like you know, brain cancer that's going to kill you next week.
Oh yeah,
like sort of thing. If you can manage it and fix it or just manage it for the rest of your life, like it's good to know.
Yeah. Well, now I have to like reconfigure my life based around this knowledge, and that is awesome. It means that I am happier. Yeah. I'm so much happier. Yeah, it's a funny old thing. But anyway, I can't remember the point. The point was that
the point is that Shelley Babbitt's a big piece of shit.
He's a big bitch. Is what I thought you were gonna say.
He's also that. There's a few things happen. We'll just skim over. Like they try his obsession with watching Family Court. They go to a random farmhouse and watch
and timed. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Things like that. They stop at another hotel for the night, and Ray is doing his who's on next, because obviously he's in a little bit of distress. Charlie keeps trying to explain the joke because he just doesn't get it at all. While he's lecturing Ray, finds out that Raymond is Rain Man from his childhood, and he actually has a picture of Raymond with a little baby Charlie, which blows Charlie's mind. I think this could have been more of a turning point for Charlie, but it is a little bit of one, but not as much as it should have been, really.
Baby step. Charlie.
The teeniest fucking baby baby fucking ant.
I know, man baby steps is what it is. Jesus Christ.
So yeah, they realize Ray lived with the family until 1965, which is shortly after their mother died, and there was an incident with hot water in the bath. Raymond keeps saying
there wasn't an extra person to be Raymond's support person. To be like, oh, well, his parent, but also his support, for his disability. Totally.
Raymond keeps going, like, hot water burn baby. So obviously that was drilled into him. And then the dad's like, I can't cope, and trundled him off to the institution to live.
Yeah, well, we know how his dad, their dad was. So yeah.
It may have probably been better for Raymond to be in that secure.
Yes, an environment that has structure. Structure, for sure. Yeah.
I need one of these. A Sony Watchman, which is like a portable television. I'm like, I fucking need one of these.
Oh,
so great. Just walking around, which
is so good.
Even though I hate commercial TV, I still want to have a Sony Watchman.
I know, but how big were the batteries that went in that fucking thing?
Those big,
they were like the D or like E batteries or whatever they were.
Like you throw it at someone and knock them unconscious.
Answer it like a phone, like an 80s phone. Like our TVs are small, but our phones are massive. And that is it. That is the 80s.
The 80s.
I love that thing. It was amazing.
But it takes a lot of stress away. So good on you, Charlie, for thinking of one good thing, I guess.
Oh, yeah. You worked it out. I enjoy him coming up with workarounds to provide comfort very slowly.
Yeah, and it's purely selfish too. It's like we can't keep stopping. So
yes. 100%. It's like, well, I guess we'll have to manage this. It's a one thing as well. I'm not sure if it's happened yet, but he tries to reason with Raymond like he's not got a disability and almost try and cure him while he's having meltdowns. Yeah. It's just like, mate, just let him have the meltdown. They look a lot like a temper tantrum. But it's because you're overwhelmed. And sometimes you just got to ride it out. Like, just give him a few moments. Like, wrap him up in a blanket.
The more you carry on, just give him harder it's going to be.
Couple minutes. Yeah, it's
come out of.
He also, like, I'm sorry, he's having a meltdown. He has still got a disability. You got to go with it. You can't cure it. It's just how it is.
We also find out that the import thing fucking failed miserably. And now Charlie owes $80,000 to all the potential buyers for these cars. There's 4 cars, $20,000 deposit. So now he owes $80,000 to these people, which he doesn't have because he would have spent all that money trying to get the cars in the first place. So he's freaking out about that. They drive through Vegas, but they don't actually stop because Charlie still hasn't put things together about how he can fucking use.
Oh man. How can he exploit his brother? How indeed.
But they realize when they're at a diner outside of Vegas, when Raymond can remember every single, so he's looked through all the songs and all the numbers for the jukebox and he remembers every single combination, and Charlie tests him out and then he gets a pack of cards and realizes he can count cards. He remembers every single card in the pack.
Ah, that's right. Yes.
So he's like, we just passed through fucking Vegas. Let's go back. And they do to Caesar's Palace.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's home of Cher, isn't it? Cher performs their heaps at Caesar's Palace.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Well, it's very popular with the queers. Old Caesar's Palace, from memory.
Sure. Famously went out with Tom Cruise for a while.
Oh, yes. I was going to say, very popular. That yes. Every queer in the world loves
Cher. I've watched Drag Race.
You have
I know
to
that.
Actually give back your, you have to give back your card, your like queer aficionado card. If you, you get your membership and they're like, how do you feel about Cher? And if you even go, they're like, oh, no, straight person. Incorrect. Yeah, but she dated Tom Cruise, and she said he was a generous lover. I think about that. I think about that often.
Anytime anyone goes to me says, you know, Tom Cruise only dates younger women, I'm like, only Katie Holmes was a bit younger than him. Also, he's actually famously dated Cher, who was much older than him, and his first wife was older than him. Yes. So, like, get bent, okay? Scientology set that up, and it didn't work.
Yes.
Fucking leave him alone.
Stop it. You hush your mouth.
Yeah, no, Leonardo DiCaprio.
You hush your mouth. Is Tom Cruise? Is he? Are we allowed to say it? Or are we gonna get? Are we gonna get squirreled? Is he leaving Scientology? Is that happening?
I mean, I read a very tabloidy article about that. He's.
I know.
I hold out hope.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, it's a time.
I don't think Tom Cruise can.
I'm not a fan.
Have something like a religion in his life. Like, he went from Catholic, unless he wants to go like Richard Gere and become Buddhist. That'd be kind of nice.
Oh yeah, Buddhism's got it's a mighty fine jam from what I've read.
There actually are a faction of extremists within Buddhism. So all religions, really? Are fucked, as it turns out.
All religions. That's such a wild time. Well, I'm
real
fuck.
They deny that the Dalai Lama is like the true Dalai Lama or the actual like the leader, and they are violent extremists. So put that in your hat.
I know. I'm really fascinated by that. I'm gonna look that up. That's absolutely my jam. I have to know things like this.
Yeah, no, I've heard about that.
My true top crime.
What? Okay, so there's a montage of them. I fucking love a good montage. Vegas montage too.
Wait. Is there a montage? No, not quite a montage, but when he's teaching him cards, is there a bit, I've written this down, he goes, "You're a beautiful man," and he smiles real big, and then there's a guitar riff?
I think
so. Does that happen?
I think so.
I think I laughed so loud. It's like loud. I'm pretty sure that's that bit, but it's like, "You're a beautiful man." Big smile. I'm like, oh, okay. Let's go exploit my brother.
Yeah, so this is the really famous bit of Rayman that I think most people know, even if they haven't seen.
Yes, here's the thing. Yes, you explain this bit and I'll tell you what I used to think about this.
In a nutshell, Charlie uses Rayman to count cards and they win big in Vegas playing poker.
Here's the thing. I knew nothing about this film. I knew that it was about somebody with autism and Tom Cruise was in it. I thought the whole film was about this.
I think that's
with
fair.
With like them being
fair.
Swindly as hell. I literally thought that. And so when I hadn't seen this film and it was about poor Raymond being harassed by his shitty brother for hours and hours.
Fucking days.
Days and days. I was really surprised. I was like, oh, is this going to be like a dumb little romp about this? No. But yeah, so I was like amazed it took this long to get to this part of the film. And it's not even the whole film. It's just one little section of it.
Yeah.
Really surprised.
Just that thing that's in the cultural lexicon where it's just everyone knows.
Yeah, well, I guess, The Simpsons as well. It's like that's the part they reference because it's the most famous bit. So that's just crazy to me.
Obviously, security notice. And so this movie made the general public think that card counting is illegal, like in Vegas or in casinos. It's not. It's just that.
Really?
It's never been.
Oh, interesting. I suppose it's like table. I guess the casinos have like their own like lay of the land and laws, their own, I guess, security.
And I mean, you're on private property, so if they don't want you there winning all their money, then they can tell you to fuck off. But then this movie kind of, when Charlie has a meeting with the head of security, he's heavily insinuates that, well, he doesn't say it's illegal, but he's like, we will tell everyone in Vegas or the casinos we can in Vegas about you, so just leave.
Oh, yes.
I think people interpreted that as it's been illegal and we'll tell the police, but I think in the movie what they're actually implying is like, you'll get your legs broke if you continue doing this. So
it's like when you get thrown out of Disneyland for being drunk. You just don't do it.
Yeah.
Otherwise Mickey Mouse will break your legs.
They never caught me that one time I got drunk in Epcot.
They didn't. But in Tokyo Disney Sea, you can get a beer, so whatever. But this had some uncomfortable moments with like, interesting moments. I don't really know how to feel about them in hindsight, but some uncomfortable bits because just before the I'm going to break your legs sort of a thing. Well, I liked the bit with Charlie and Raymond dancing.
Yeah, that was really sweet.
I thought that was really lovely. It was really sweet, but it's for his date, which I mean, like, honestly, like people with disability have every right to seek like sex work and stuff like that, even though, but it's sort of like set up so that Raymond doesn't understand that.
Yeah. He doesn't know she's a sex worker.
I don't know.
He just thinks she's a pretty lady and he asks about prescription medication.
Yes.
And
yeah, he does. Likes her. That's like, I like that. That was a really cute little throwback to that. But like, I mean, like, yeah, disability and like seeking sex work and like, that's like super normal, like no problems. But I suppose because they set it up so that Raymond doesn't have a concept of money. He doesn't have a concept of what sex work is, things like that. That was like, okay, this is just weird. And of course, obviously she doesn't show up. I suppose Raymond seems like a little bit sad about it, but then Susanna kisses him in the elevator.
Oh, yeah, Susanna's rejoined them in Vegas. Like she's obviously gotten over her rage and has come back.
She decided she's like, yes. So that's a bit weird. So Susanna shows up and she kisses him. It's kind of annoying because it's out of pity and autistic people don't really want to be pitied.
I didn't take it as pity. I took that as, this is something like he actually wants a connection with a woman and it was was denied to him. So I'm going to let him have it and see.
It's such a, I don't know, it made me uncomfortable. I don't really know how to process that one.
I think,
because I'm like,
if that scene existed, it's
weird.
That would be just awful. But I think it was more sympathetic.
Highly, highly agree. I see what they were trying to do, but it didn't, I don't think it hit the mark at all. I'm sure in the day, but now, no. It felt uncomfortable and it felt like weirdly, like dubious in the nature of consent, because Charlie also never outrightly says yes. He struggles with agency because of the nature of his disability. That, like, you know, his agency is kind of taken away from him in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, but it is also set up that he does want a connection with a woman. So I just think it's worth mentioning. And if you have, like, if listeners have thoughts about it, please, like, I don't know, let us know. I just thought it was really interesting, and I'm sure there are lots of really good opinions about that one out there. So
Back to the dancing scene. So Charlie teaches him to dance for the date, and it is a really sweet scene. This is when you actually properly see Charlie being reasonably kind. Like he's still like oh, I feel a bit silly and everything, but he teaches him to dance, and then he actually goes to give him a hug, but grabs him behind the neck, and Raymond just can't.
Oh, it's the most aggressive hug in history.
Yeah. It's like 80s business guy hugs.
Oh my God. You know, I laughed so hard. I was like, autistic people can hug. Trust me, I love hugging. It doesn't always come naturally to a lot of folks, but that hug was like a tackle. I was like, whoa.
I also love
their matching suit.
Well, they also set up, then that montage, they got matching suits and haircuts and everything. But I think they set up earlier when he grabbed him by the neck to yell at him. So when he grabbed him kind of and put him in by back of the neck, immediately he was like, oh
they
shit.
They did set that up. Yeah.
He's going to hurt me.
Yeah, his frame of reference is that's a bad situation.
Yeah.
I'm not unreasonable for Raymond at all. Yeah, I really liked the dancing scene. What I kept laughing at was throughout this, Tom Cruise kept doing his Tom Cruise clap really loudly.
Fucking love that clap.
Autistic people fucking hate sudden loud noises more than anything. So he's doing it like right in his ear as well, and Raymond wouldn't flinch. And I was like, oh man, nah. Like that was moments where I was like, that's not how that would go. Like we can be quite highly reactive in a lot of ways. It was just wild like that. But yeah, no, his big clap constantly. I do love the Tom Cruise clap because it reminds me of that the deep fake of what's his face doing the Tom Cruise impression. That is like him doing the crap. It's crap. Who did the clap? Pardon me. Tom Cruise doing his big Tom Cruise crap. Him doing that like is the most Tom Cruise-ism. It's my favorite impersonation ever of all time.
So good. To further prove that Charlie has, you know, softened a little bit towards his brother, he lets him drive the Buick around the Caesar's Palace driveway, which nice little heartwarming moment. They're all having a lovely kiss.
Yes.
Hits every curb, and I'm like, he's like, I'm a good driver. I'm a really good driver. And he's like fucking smashing all the curbs.
He's been told that as affection, I'd say, by their dad.
Yeah.
It's his, like, also like showing, I guess, well, we never get to see the dad, but it's like he cared in his own way.
Yeah.
Like, piece of shit.
Fucking turd.
In his 80s businessman way.
Which is not really at all.
Not really at all.
They get back to LA. Susanna gets dropped off. He catches up with Dr. Bruner before the psych evaluation, before they go to court. He wants to make a deal with Charlie so he can get Ray back into the care he needs to be in, and offers him $250,000. No questions asked. That's it. Charlie refuses because all of a sudden he's like, no, I think I want to be a brother to Raymond. I think I can do it.
Actually, I've had a little change of heart. Ooh.
And I want all the money for it too. So
yeah.
Yeah, real. I'm like, I thought you were doing better, but.
Like, how have you come this far and not seen that you're in over your fucking head, mate? And also, you're not what's best.
No, I don't. Like, not you're by causing a long stress. Fucking shot.
Like, it's not just about how are you going to manage this. It's this person requires help, and that's okay.
If they'd grown up together. And he could have, like, definitely could have been his carer and everything, but that's not the reality.
But he has no idea how to manage. Yeah, for sure. It's like, Charlie loving to do things for Charlie's sake rather than for thinking about what Raymond needs and makes Raymond happy. So,
And I think the first thing that kind of makes Charlie start having a change of heart with this is when Ray tries to make some Eggo waffles.
Big in Vegas. No, I'm kidding. No, sorry.
Because they're in Vegas. Sorry, I didn't say in Vegas. They made lots of money, and so they could pay the thing back, and they made a little bit extra as well. So I think that's probably the main reason why Charlie was so chuffed. Like, not because he's learnt much, it's because he's made a bunch of money.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Ray sets off a smoke alarm and really, like, has a proper meltdown over it. And
Loud sudden noises, my friend. Not a good time.
Like, those fucking alarms make me want to throw myself out of a building.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Absolutely. You know, if I've already had a bad day and they start, I'll just start crying. Like, straight up.
So we call a day ruiner.
We call a big shit and fart of a day ruiner, my friends. It's Oh, you want to see me go from zero to meltdown? Why?
It's like a fucking unexpected beeping.
Oh, fucking, nah. Sit in the corner, clutch my head, can't deal. Absolutely not.
So there, they got the psych appointment. He gets takes him to get pancakes at this diner that I wish I doubt exists still. So this fucking pastel pink diner.
It was so cute. Like, no, I even wrote this down. I was like, holy shit, look at this diner. Yeah, it's so good.
But he's doing things like points out the fact that the maple syrup is out. Like he's actually made these little accommodations for him. And at one point,
I know, that started happening. I was like,
so a little bit earlier, yes. We saw them both eating cheese balls with toothpicks. Like even
toothpicks. I didn't notice that.
Charlie
so
was doing
sweet.
That too. So
it's like adapting to his needs.
Yeah, he's adapted, but they don't make. I mean, maybe they don't need to make a big show of them, but
yeah.
They were so subtle that I think for him to suddenly make this huge change in his mind about what he wants to do with Raymond was too dramatic. Like we didn't see him develop enough.
Yes. It felt really dramatic. It did feel like bam, and I'm a good person now. Yeah. Even. Because I got money. It's like,
So they go to the psych. It's Dr. Bruner and another psychiatrist, and they like ask him questions. Like they talk about what they did over the last week, and Raymond like just says all the things that he remembers the best. I guess like I lost $3,000 in Vegas. Like even though he won like $100,000,
he likes numeric stuff though.
Yeah, and he learned how to dance. My brother taught me how to dance. I kissed a girl. I'm like, oh, how was it? And he's like, wet, which is exactly what kisses are.
Yeah, exactly. No, I remember my first kiss in a haunted house at a school fete, and I was like I went back for seconds, but I was like, ugh.
Oh, this is so slimy.
Yeah, it's so strange. Yeah, it's very wet.
They ask Charlie if he's witnessed any outbursts, and Charlie's so argumentative the whole way through. It's an infuriating 80s talking over each other.
Quite
I don't
funny,
think you can blame
it?
The movie. Yeah. I think it's just what the fucking 80s were.
Yeah, but it's also like showing like that Charlie is in his by his nature so on the defensive all the time.
Yeah, never does anything wrong.
Yeah, they're asking him very simple, logical questions, but Charlie's jumping to the conclusion that he's going to be blamed and he's going to lose his brother. So that was really interesting because these are people who are not like, they're not the police. They're just trying to get the information so they can help make the best decision. And all the questions they're asking are really reasonable.
Yeah.
Like their questions I've heard, they're similar to questions I've heard in like therapy or things like that, just so they can assess you.
Mm.
But Charlie is, afraid of being blamed or being seen as a shithead, which we know he is. And now he realizes he has been as well. So he's on the like defensive. He's got his guard up. That's what I thought about that scene anyway.
I wrote a note. Everyone keeps talking over each other. Brownie face. That's how that scene sometimes. I was like, this is too much. Especially with Raymond, not coping there.
Yeah, well, I wrote down anxious because he started getting anxious again. Yes.
The psychs asked, not Dr. Bruner, the other psychiatrist, is the director, fun fact.
Really? Oh, wow. Rando?
Yeah.
Run out of budget, losers.
They kept asking Ray, does he want to go back with Charlie? And but do you want to go back to Walbrook? And he's like, yeah. So.
This is interesting. No, he does know what he wants. He wants both.
Yeah.
That's what I got from that. That situation is like, you want to go to Walbrook? Yes, because he feels safe there. Does he want to stay with Charlie? Yes, he wants Charlie in his life.
Mm.
So it's like, it's his way of answering both. Yeah. So I was lucky that I was like, no, he knows who he's talking about. He's not incapable of making decisions. He just can't communicate them.
But I think I think the movie makes that see he can't make up his own mind. Like,
that's the thing. But no, he can. He is. That's what I got from that. I was like, he wants both. And that's cool. That's really, really cool. Yeah. Also like the little hug that Tom Cruise gives him, a little tenderness when he gets out of the room. Like I was like, nice. Like we've reached it. We've done it. Yeah. Like he's the psychologist's leave, and he like acknowledges that Raymond's overwhelmed. He acknowledges all of the.
And keeps promising like we won't, no more questions. I'm sorry. And then they put their heads together and I'm like, oh, that's really sweet.
Did you know decision-making is something that autistic people struggle with?
Oh.
Yeah, that's a legit thing. So, like, that him struggling with decision-making, it's wild. Like, it can be anything from, like, which cereal should I have for breakfast through to what life changes, what should I study? That like, they can be just as scary for one another. Like, oh, what if I eat the wrong cereal and the texture's bad and it ruins my day and takes all my spoons away and I have to lie down?
Yeah.
Versus, like, that's how big that problem can be sometimes, depending on how much energy and mental energy you have on the day. It's wild. So, yeah.
So Charlie, obviously, I guess after that psych evaluation, realizes that Walbrook is a better option.
Yes.
To Finally. It only took him long enough.
It only took me a kidnapping of you 3 days to realize that I should have just
left. No, it was like 7 days to get across.
7 days?
Yeah, it's a long time. Do you think about how many hotels I stayed at? Yeah, it was like 7 days all up to get across.
Oh, yeah, shit, it was, yeah. Oh, my God, it really was. One week. Raymond. Oh, Jesus. My gosh. Lordy. Charlie.
Oh, and it was, I like the bit where he gives him like a forehead kiss and Raymond says Charlie because he spells his name out. Like, he spells out.
He likes that. Yeah. Things when he likes them, yeah. It's really sweet. Little habitual things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of like how they set this up. So they cut to when they think it's going to be the court case and they're walking through this official looking building and you're like, oh, it's the court case. But then they pop out and it's actually the train station.
The train station. Yeah. I really liked that too. Yeah.
They're
that
like, oh, really you good. Tricked me.
Really clever. Oh, yeah. Oh, you made the right decision. No, I liked that I made the right decision. It's like, it's just little things that I like. And I'm obviously very positive. Like I said, he said goodbye to Raymond and puts him on the train and then reinforces when he's going to see him.
Yeah.
Autistic people don't like unexpected things.
Yeah.
Well, my ADHD would argue otherwise, but loves unexpected things. But knowing when you have plans in place and being able to like look ahead is really good for autistic brains because it means that we don't get overwhelmed by quick change. So the fact that he's like, I'll see you in 2 weeks and I'll see you in this. And it's like,
yeah, he promises, it gives him a timeline and yeah.
Yes, exactly. Like that's like, oh, you finally got it. And it's, I mean, like that's their way of showing an audience that he cares. Which I really liked. And I'm also showing he cares on the level is how I want to sort of say it. Like he's reached his level as best he can in this 80s movie. So I really liked that as well. I thought that was really cute.
And like he says, how many seconds is that? And immediately Raymond can answer. Second, just in case we forgot that he's savant for one
he's
minute.
Savant.
But yeah, so he has his bag full of treats and like Dr. Bruner's like, here you go, get your new underpants from Kmart. And he's like, what do you reckon? And Raymond's like, Kmart sucks. I'm like, incorrect.
Kmart rules.
Raymond's going to go to Kmart and be like, fuck yeah, my underpants. Thank God. I just said that to shut my brother up.
Thank God I'm away from Charlie Babbitt. I can get my underpants without shame.
The movie kind of ends where it's like Charlie's overcome with emotion. And also, so they're taking a train, obviously, so they don't catch planes. I just want to point out, I worked out how long an Amtrak train gets from LA to 72 hours that fucking train takes. It's not direct. Oh. It's like the train system in the US is fucking awful. Like it should not take three. It should take 24 hours max, but the way it goes. So yeah, anyway, sounds like a nightmare. So good on Dr. Bruner for being there to escort him. I definitely think Dr. Bruner had nothing but, the right intentions for Raymond.
Oh, Dr. Bruner's like pretty much a ledge. Yeah. Like he's great. I really like him. I really like Charlie's like favorite carer as well. I thought he was great. He's a really chill dude. Yeah, that was so nice. I loved him.
At the start,
so
he kept
much.
Saying like, calling out for Vern. Like he's like, oh shit, Vern. But Vern said at the start of the movie, like if something happened to me, I don't think he would notice or care. But when he wasn't with Vern, he was immediately calling out for Vern.
No, he was scared. Like, yeah, incorrect. Autistic people have, no matter their level of ability, have very complex thoughts and emotions. And like,
because they're not shown. So yeah, if something happened to Vern and Raymond wouldn't show him the normal emotions there and then.
What they would expect. Yeah.
But he, when he called out for him when he was stressed, it seemed like he wasn't showing any emotion at leaving Charlie. He was too engrossed in his Watchmen, but you bet he talked that whole time about all the stuff he did with Charlie.
Yeah,
the whole way back.
Exactly. Like, yeah, it's just because he's not making eye contact. He's not doing anything. It's like, no, it's like a frustrating thing. I've been following like autistic Instagram a little bit, and there are a lot of autistic people who are nonverbal, who use devices to communicate, and they're highly intelligent people. It's just that the ability to not be able to communicate like verbally or effectively or in a neurotypical way means that people will think you are stupid. It's like really frustrating for folks who use those devices to communicate. So just like really interesting. And it's a lot of that stuff. It's so fun to learn it now that I know I'm part of the community in my own way, in my own little where of the spectrum or circle of the spectrum. This film is very problematic. I think before I said I've never seen a Tom Cruise film I didn't like, I did not like this film.
Okay.
I'll be honest with you. I wanted to. I just thought that, I don't know, I guess it's just, I think it's just too dated for me to enjoy.
Yeah.
So I find that really, and that's fine. Like, watch it or don't. I don't care. Like, it came out in the 80s. But I was going to watch it again and I couldn't bring myself to because I was like, nah, I just couldn't sit through it again. And it's so funny. I think, well, my husband said, Peter said at the time, he was like, wow, it's amazing seeing this because at the time it was considered a masterpiece. And now I watch it with what the knowledge I have of myself and what autism looks like and how it feels to me personally. And obviously, like, we as a society progress the best we can. So yeah, I found it really frustrating to watch and really stressful, especially because I'm just like, stop stop tormenting the nice man.
Yeah, right.
Let him go home and watch his shows. My God.
Do you know what's wild? Like, do you ever think about Forrest Gump?
Yes. That's a funny little film, isn't it? Yeah.
Because that was made not a full 10 years later. When was Forrest Gump made?
Yeah, I thought it was 80s. Or is it early 90s?
No, it's 90s. No, I was in, oh. I think it was 95. Hang on.
Interesting. Because what I remember about Forrest Gump.
94. So I was in, yeah, 94. I was still in primary school.
I was 5. Yeah. So Forrest Gump's interesting because that's about someone with an intellectual disability telling like tales of whimsy.
Yeah. Problematic as fuck.
Oh, totally. Yes. But what I like about that film is that it's a retrospective of American history told from one person's perspective. And yeah. It's just really interesting for that reason. But other than that, I don't think I've rewatched it in a long time.
Yeah, I'm a bit too scared to watch it because I've always loved it. But
and you're allowed to. I'm not going to judge you for it.
But I know I'm watching it again. Mm. I'm going to not like it. It's the same as the people probably may have loved Rain Man.
Yeah, it's
and
funny.
Then seeing it later, they were like, oh, no, this wasn't.
Yeah, you like can't go back once you've learned. And once you've grown as a person, it's really hard. And I've never had that opportunity. I never had that opportunity because I only saw it recently for the first time, conveniently for the podcast.
Well, yeah, same.
That is an interesting thing, isn't it?
I think a lot of these Oscar baity movies, not a lot of them date well, I don't think.
No.
I think when they're made and they've got some, you know, the simpleton character that, you know, everyone's going to be like, oh, my whole perspective has changed.
For my whole heart. So, yeah, but it's like, well, no, it's never told from the correct, well, it's never told from a perspective that's like truly empathetic to the character. Experiencing
that disability.
For an Oscar, so. Totally. It's like, it's all about how that affects someone else's life. It's almost like Manic Pixie Dream Girl, but for like making you not a piece of shit, like with disability. It's so weird. I mean, like, I have a lot of love for Manic Pixie Dream Girl movies. I think they're lovely. Like, I love Zooey Deschanel in pretty much everything. I think she's a darling. So I have like a lot of love for those films, but that's the only thing I can sort of think of to equate it to that people do get annoyed at.
Yeah.
Like, you know, on a fast scale. I suppose a lot of disability advocates do get annoyed at films like this with good reason. And I mean, like, Sia even made a fucking film recently that everyone was like, dude, don't do it. Yeah. Don't do it. And she cracked it. I haven't seen that film, so I don't want to.
No one's
going to
see that movie because it looks like fucking hot garbage. So
it looks embarrassing. And all I can think of is that woman with Bunny being like, the girl in the movie has 6 buttons and my dog has 80. You know, my dog's a poodle. It's a smart dog, but it's also not a person. Like, that's embarrassing, you know? Yeah. And once again, it comes down to like the complexity of inner thoughts not necessarily being any less because somebody doesn't communicate verbally. This and many thoughts. But yeah, so I was really surprised because we finally found a Tom Cruise film that I didn't really enjoy. I liked him having a big tantrum. I fucking loved that.
I would love to have seen another movie where he's as equally a piece of shit, but if it didn't have
this narrative. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I guess was, I don't know, which is, there are a few, like Jerry Maguire.
Ah, I still haven't seen that.
Yeah, so this one was, he was a massive piece of shit, and I think.
And then all of a sudden he wasn't, ba-ba! That's how it felt. Like, it could have been.
But I wonder,
Yes.
I do wonder if back then people were a bit more, like, they knew he was an asshole, but they were still a bit more sympathetic because
it was
a lot of other people would have probably acted like assholes.
Totally, yeah. It would have been more like, I guess, like, the culture of the time around disability. Like, you know. We talk about it. You get the new information, you adjust your settings. And it's a really good way to be, like, you know, rather than being stagnant or staying steadfast in things that are harmful. So yeah, it's, you know, if you've got the ability to grow, go with it. And I'd be really interested. I don't know, like I don't know if anybody's listened to this, I guess, and they are on the spectrum and have any more opinions about it. I would really love to hear them as a
bloody
fellow.
Tweet at me, would you?
Yeah, go on. Or also, like, I know I wasn't going to plug my Instagram or anything, but like, come and say hi. I'm at Lauren Stardust. And I'm really interested to hear what people think about autistic representation in media because I'm new to it. I think my concept of autism would have been quite naive. And then it turns out I am part of the community. So it's such a weird thing. Or it's like such a turnaround and such a relief for me. But I wonder, I would like to know what people who have known for longer, what they would think, what they have thought about this film in the past. That's all. That's my, you know, message me, guys. I don't know if you care to.
Well, Tom Cruise-isms, not a lot. Quickly go over them. Like the
cracking the shits.
He cracked the shits.
Oh,
like
boy.
In true Tom Cruise style.
Oh,
he did the big claps. Possibly his clappiest movie yet.
I don't think he ran.
No, there was no running.
That's what I always think of when I think of Tom Cruise.
He kind of hurried to get to Raymond when he was on the road. But that was.
Yes.
Yeah.
he did a little hustle. I think I usually write down if he did a run. I get really excited when he does. I'm like, yep. Oh, good. It's good. Yeah.
Pump those arms, boy.
Go. Go. A little, like, so straight. And his posture. Oh, oh my God. I've sit at my computer like a little shrimp, a little prawn all day. I could never run that straight back. There's no way. Ah, pretzel myself.
Caught up in a ball, you know. And exactly. I got to run, and I'm like, oh, Jesus. I actually don't think I can think of many other
Tom Cruise-isms.
Like,
he did his big smile, and then there was a guitar riff.
The smarmy, smartest guy in the room thing.
Yes.
Yep, he had that. Being a bit of an asshole. And
he had sunglasses.
Apparently the sales of Ray-Bans again went up. So Risky
really?
Business, Top Gun, and this have
damn.
Helped.
When's Maverick out?
May.
Okay, I'll see if I can book a flight.
You heard it here first, folks. There should be a live episode about then.
Ooh.
So tap a nose.
Whoa, whoa,
if you're in Brisbane, taps nose.
Ooh.
I haven't figured out the details yet, but that's the plan.
That's a good time.
Okay, well, Tom Cruise-isms, not too many to go into. So let's rate the movie and give our final thought.
Let me ask. What do you rate this film? How many out of 5 stars? Oh, I mean, 5 of whatever you may choose. Do you rate this film, Cara?
This is really hard.
I won't be offended. If you like this movie, I'm not going to judge you.
No, I would say a generous 2.5 farts in an elevator out of 5. Uh-oh, fart.
I would like to rate this film. I am not generous. I'm going to rate this film a 0.5 a pair of Kmart undies. I don't care to watch it again, but that's just because of the nature of the beast is I can't go back in time and unknow what I know now. I hope if you did enjoy this film and you're a part of the community that you found some solace in it. Solace? What is the word?
Solace.
Some witchy shit going on there. Solace. But I suspect many people on the spectrum would be like, oh man, why'd you do that? So silly.
Yeah.
That was dumb.
So
I don't know.
My rationale for 2.5 is because I don't hate it.
That's fine.
So
yeah, no judgment here.
And it's because just as a film.
Yeah.
And as a neurotypical person, it hit a lot of beats that were enjoyable, even though I was fuming at Charlie the whole time. Like, I hated him. And even at the end, I was like, it's still for selfish reasons.
But truly.
I liked, stuff that has been used in pop culture that now, like I just watched saw a thing on TikTok that was about Tina from Bob's Burgers. It's like, I think I have autism. And Bob's like, you don't have autism. And her brother drops a bunch of toothpicks on the ground and says, how many toothpicks? And she's like, 300. And there's three toothpicks on the ground. And she's like, Tina, there's 3 toothpicks.
Tina is probably a better representation of autism for sure. I love Tina. God.
Incredible. There's so many good things throughout pop culture that have referenced this, and for better or worse. But watching it, just at a real sit back, understanding it's a problem. There's a lot of probo stuff in this. I found it enjoyable. I liked seeing a dead shit horrible Tom Cruise. I kind of liked being how uncomfortable it made me. Yeah, I think it was actually really nicely shot. I think Dustin Hoffman, given what he knew and the amount of research he did, I think in that respect he did a good job. But it's so hard to see it through a lens of anything. But
what we know now,
my best friend has autism, and what I know now and everything.
Yeah.
So like I kept thinking like back then, from what I could tell reading and everything, there was some people who didn't like it, but overwhelmingly people who understood what autism was like, this is great. This is the first time a movie has ever dealt with something like this, and in a positive way.
In a kind way. Trying its best to be kind.
So,
I think that's what comes back to the imperfect representation is still representation, because people were gagging for it. It was before this or in lots of situations, you're put in a mental institution and you're forgotten about. And that's not cool. You know, we exist in many different forms.
So in that little doco thing I watched, they mentioned that people had written in saying that by watching that movie, they have an autistic sibling and it completely changed their perspective. And now they found a way to become really, really close with their sibling, which beforehand they really struggled with it. And so in that respect, it probably helped a lot of people, but it would have been like, it's a bummer, but unfortunately the stigma.
Oh, totally. But it's just how like I said, imperfect representation is still representation. And if people were helped by that, I'll take it. But of course we know better. And we know,
I imagine people went and got diagnosed because of that movie, because they're like, they mightn't have been as extreme as that portrayal, but they're like, oh, I have a lot of my son or my child or I myself have all these similar things.
Oh, back then I see that potentially. I don't want to like say yay or nay, I guess, because of the nature of what diagnosis was for me and how hard it was. But I mean, it's because I passed as neurotypical in a lot of ways.
Yep.
And then I look back on myself and it's hilarious. Fuck. Like, it's like when I thought I was straight for 30 years. I'm not. Idiot. And you look back at my photos, like me wearing rainbows constantly, it's like, oh. And I know wearing rainbows does not necessarily like negate.
Unfortunately, it doesn't make you less straight. And okay, even personal experience.
gay for Tom Cruise. Yeah, but it's like I look back at myself and I'm like, I can't believe it. But that's the thing as well, is like my autistic brain didn't clue in that I was part of the queer community either. And a lot of, well, when you can mask, or when you're taught to mask because you don't know any better and you just think you've got to fit in, your brain goes, how do I do that? How do I fit in? How do I be perfect? And unfortunately, that can lead to OCD, which is another thing that a lot of autistic people like. OCD isn't always about being tidy. It can be obsessive compulsive with behaviors and thoughts,
yep.
Like me having freaking out about leaving the house without makeup on for most of my life, because that's what women do. So, you know, I thought I was a woman. I thought I was straight. So yeah, it's really, there's lots of little things that I did that I can now trace back to autistic behavior. But of course, for most of my life, I passed. Yeah. The nature of, I guess what I'm trying to say is the nature of diagnosis is always growing.
Yeah.
So of course I didn't get diagnosed in the 90s when my mom actually took me to get diagnosed, but I make eye contact, which is something that autistic people don't do. No, I can do that sometimes, most of the time. I fret very heavily for what people who were closer to Dustin Hoffman's character like would have had to go through if people just didn't believe autism was a thing.
Mm.
If they were presenting closer to that, like, would they just think you were like a village idiot or something like that? Oh, it would have been so horrible and distressing. Yeah. Yeah. Or they just send you to like a mental institution that just treated you like nothing, like you're an animal. Like, yeah. It's quite distressing. So I guess once again, yeah, you can baby steps and then a few leaps and bounds in between when it comes to representation and helping our community discover themselves.
Thank you so much for providing, yeah. Like, I mean, it's your unique insight, and obviously,
oh yeah, yeah, absolutely,
different people are gonna have different experiences. Maybe there are some people who are autistic who love this movie. I doubt it. I don't know, like,
yes,
no one I know who has autism has ever said that this movie rules and was great for representation.
No, this movie sucks.
But this movie was never for people with autism. Like, it was to make people who definitely don't have autism to maybe be a little less shitty to people who have it. I don't know. I don't actually know what the point of it was.
And also, like, feel better.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. I get it.
Feel better, like, you don't want to punch an autistic person in the face. You're a nice person.
Oh, congratulations. You are not a piece of shit. The only things I like would like to rep that actually aren't my own things, if anyone is out there and interested about or autism and you've been late diagnosed, I highly recommend reading Clem Basto's book, Late Bloomer, about her experience of being diagnosed late in life. And if you're an adult who's struggling with information and trying to find relatable things in regards to autism, if you've just been diagnosed, there is a really cool podcast called 1800 Seconds on Autism. And I love it to pieces because it is run by autistic people and then talking about their experiences. It was really nice because when you find out you're autistic later in life, there are no resources for adults because they try and diagnose you when you're young, and then they try and get you into certain types of therapy when you're young. So every time I was trying to Google, like, how do I deal with this? It would come up, how do you as a parent, a neurotypical parent, deal with your child this? And I'm like, well, I need to raise myself now. I have people who support me,
yeah.
But at the end of the day, I've got to take care of me because I'm the one experiencing, and I am an autistic person. Those might be my top two. So 1800 Seconds on Autism and Late Bloomer by Clem Basto are a really good place to start if you've just been diagnosed.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, like Lauren said before, Lauren Stardust on Instagram, if you want to have a little chat about some stuff, some of the topics we've brought up.
Yeah, I hope you like Renaissance. Lots of Renaissance, lots of costumes. I have lots of interest, lots of queer art. I love Renaissance and queer art. Anything beautiful. Yeah, good times.
As for me, it's Tom Cruise Reviews on Instagram, Tom Cruise Review, no S in the end, on Twitter, or tomcruisereviews.com. If you want to have a more direct chat with me, you could also email me at tomcruisereviews@gmail.com. I don't usually give that email out because I forget, but yeah, if you have any things you want to talk about or you want to connect with Lauren that way, just yeah, send me an email. And please rate, review, and subscribe to podcasts. I keep forgetting to mention that too because I'm the worst. Yeah, that would be deeply appreciated. Once again, Lauren, thank you so much for, you know, telling us your story and, you know, helping me sort of dissect a movie that I have no authority or like qualifications or anything to kind of
I don't know. You're pretty aficionado.
Like, I'm cluey about it. And, you know, I have family members who have ADHD, and, you know, I have so many friends who have been recently diagnosed with ADHD and autism and both, because there is so much overlap between the two. And
so much.
Yeah. So I try to be as knowledgeable as possible, but boy, am I just a big normal brain most of the time. So
are you though? Are you? Because I just, like, there's this thing is eggs have a way of finding other eggs. So you might not be autistic, but you might not be as neurotypical.
I may not either. Be. I am mostly just a big stinking weirdo.
That's why I love you.
All right. Well, that's us. Thank you so much for listening. We have talked a lot, so there will not be a mini-sode this week. So we'll catch you in 2 weeks' time for the second last Tom Cruise film that I have left to review. Oh my God. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.